Friends, the first thing necessary in trying to understand something of this power of thought is to realize that it is a real force. Just because we can't see it or touch it or sense it with some of our senses, it doesn't seem real to us and therefore not very important. We have become so accustomed to thinking the only things exist are the things we can sense with our senses. Science really has been responsible for this a century or so ago. But since that time, science has gone way beyond this. And many of us are still living according to those habits of the past. Einstein himself tells us that if we are to understand anything of reality, and I quote him, we have to transcend the rabble of the senses. Science also tells us that there are at least 70 octaves of different rates of vibration in the electric magnetic scale, and that man's eyes, the human eye, is only capable of responding to one of those octaves. So if we're still one of those individuals that say seeing is believing, what we are really saying is that we only believe 1/70th of what science says exists. For example, right here in this room, we know there are all kinds of rates of vibrations and forces going through here that we're completely unaware of, completely unable to respond to as far as our senses are concerned. If I put up here a radio set, and I put up here a TV set, and turn the dials to tune in on some of these rates of vibration, we'd soon discover there are music programs and dramas and lectures and the inevitable commercials going all through here right now. But we are unable to respond to them until we get an extension of our senses in the form of a radio set or a TV set and so on. So thought also is one of these forces. And it is just as real as X-ray or radio waves or any of these other rates of vibration. Also, we are using it practically every conscious moment, whether wisely or unwisely. I think it's very interesting to note that very often these forces and powers that we are unable to respond to with our senses are much more real and powerful than those that we can respond to. For example, radioactive waves set in motion following atomic explosion. You can't hear them, you can't see them, you can't sense them. But they have the power to destroy everything for hundreds of miles around. So it is a real force. The second thing we need to keep in mind is that the mental body, or our mind, like the physical body, is very much subject to the force of habit. And if we accustom it to vibrating, responding in a certain way to different rates of vibration, it has a tendency to reproduce those more easily and quickly the next time. For example, it's very easy to get into the habit of criticizing and finding fault. I know, because long before I knew anything about theosophy or the power of thought, I had such a habit. I would be riding to work on the bus in the morning, and my eyes would run up and down the aisle, and the way this lady stood and the shape of that man's hands, and why did he wear this kind of a tie, and so on, up and down the aisle. It seemed like a perfectly harmless pastime, and I might add it's a very common habit among the people of this Western civilization, where the accent is on analytical mind, scientific mind, where we are trained to criticize, analyze, take things to pieces and find out what's wrong with them. What are the common topics of conversation? What's wrong with the weather? What's wrong with politics? What's wrong with traffic? What's wrong with the educational system? What's wrong with our neighbors? And so on. A very common habit of finding fault and criticizing everything. Well, now, of course, we can always find something wrong with everyone and with everything if we develop that kind of thought. But also, we can find something good about everyone and everything if we develop that kind of thought habit. In that wonderful little booklet at the feet of the Master, there is a quotation that says, "In everyone and in everything there is good. In everyone and in everything there is evil. Either of these we can strengthen by thinking on it." Have you ever had the experience of being with an individual who thought you were a truly wonderful person? Just about perfect? What do we do when we're in that kind of a circumstance? Don't we try our utmost to be that same kind of an individual? Such a simple thing, isn't it? Yet I think that one little idea alone could transform life around us. Think what people would be like if all of their good points were greatly accentuated and their weaknesses just dropped away. So simple. Yet this is what we could help to do with ourselves and others if we learn to control our thinking. The next thing we have to keep in mind is that negative, destructive types of thought stir up the lower types of emotion. If you begin thinking of some unkind thing you think someone has said about you, or some unjust act that someone has done to you, and allow your mind to dwell on it a while, even if it's something that may have happened 10 years ago, you will find you can soon work up some real emotions, some real feeling against that individual. I feel that this is the way much of our group prejudice is built up. If we allow ourselves to become mentally critical of a certain group of people and then watch for anything that any of them do that's wrong, and then allow these kinds of thoughts, this negative type of thinking to stir up the emotions, we soon find ourselves hating those people. And then we infect others with that hate. And so we are helping to build up trouble and war and destruction in the world, where we could reverse this process and use it creatively for the helping of mankind. Mr. Layton has just discussed one of the most valuable ways in which we can use this creative imagination of ours, this divine creative energy which each individual has within himself, a fragment of that divine creative energy, which is the one creative force in the whole universe. I like what Dr. Besant has said on this, and I hope you will excuse me if I quote it again, because I think it's something worth repeating. She said, "God's thought makes universes. Your thought makes yourself. It is the one creative force by which you shape, mold, and build your character." The one creative force in the whole universe, a fragment of which is in each individual. Now let's see how you and I use or misuse this on ourselves every day. There is a very splendid little book called Gods in Exile, in which Mr. Vanderleeuw, the author of that book, explains that we never speak, we never act, unless we have first thought, first made an image We aren't usually aware of this because the mental processes are so rapid and our consciousness such unknown territory to most of us that we aren't aware what goes on in this mental process. But if I so much as lift this hand, I first make a picture of that in my mind. The imagination, image, makes an image of it before the action comes about. Now, I think that's a very startling thought, and one that we could do a lot of thinking about, because how often we hear individuals say, oh, I just did it without thinking. I didn't intend to do it. Or the words just popped out of my mouth. I really didn't mean to say them. Yet he says we never speak and we never act unless we have first thought. Of course, he isn't referring here to the brain processes, which can become automatic, but the mental processes that go on in this mental body of ours. When we think, we build an image, a form, and we pour into that divine creative energy, which must eventually result in action. Sometimes it takes a number of repeated thoughts before the energy is sufficient to bring about action. But as I was just saying, our mental body is very much subject to the force of habit. And I think that many a time we become powerless to resist the thing we ourselves have created. Most of us ignore our daydreams and our imaginings and think it doesn't matter, nobody knows about them, it isn't bothering anyone else. In reality, they are the one and only danger. Strong desires may be felt, but it is only when we allow this creative imagination of ours to work on those desires, to picture ourselves giving way to those desires, that the trouble begins. It isn't the object of desire. It's allowing the imagination to picture you reacting to that object of desire. Now let me take some simple little example and show you how this works. And to take something that I'm sure will tread on no one's toes. Suppose we have a vice of eating sweets. Maybe I am treading on somebody's toes. We have such a craving for sweets, or such a habit of eating sweets, that we've decided it's ruining our health, or we're gaining too much weight, or whatever, and we make up our mind that we're not going to eat any more candy. All right. As long as you can control that mind of yours, that creative imagination, to the point of never picturing yourself eating the candy, it's easy. There's nothing to it. The piece of candy is the object of desire, is it not? Now that has no effect on you, whatever, and you would never eat it if you could control your mind to the point of not picturing yourself giving way to that desire. Now, what usually happens? We walk down the street past the candy shop, or the friend offers us the chocolate, and right away, we picture ourselves enjoying that piece of candy. Then we think of all the reasons why we should have that particular piece of candy. Oh, we might hurt our friend's feelings if we refuse, or this particular piece doesn't have much sweet in it. It wouldn't do us any harm to have just this one piece. After all, our energy's been a little low anyway, and maybe we need the candy to fix that. Well, of course, we can think of plenty of reasons once we allow our imagination to begin working on it. And if we do, we may just as well eat the candy and get it over with. Now, if we really wanted to quit eating candy, or to quit drinking or smoking or any other sensual excess, we would never allow a picture of that thing to enter our mind. Every time it attempted to enter, we would turn our mind to something else, which we the self had decided ahead of time. Take another example. We've decided we need to get up an hour earlier in the morning. We have some studying to do or some work to do, or we want to get out in the garden, or we have something that we want to accomplish, and we decide after thinking it all through that we want to get up an hour earlier in the morning. So we set the alarm and go to sleep. Now, as long as you can control that imagination of yours to the point of thinking only of getting up in the morning, the alarm goes off, you get up, and there's no argument, there's nothing to it. But what usually happens? I see you know without me telling you. There is another phase of this process that I think we completely overlook, and that is that to have control of any power, we must be able to turn it off as well as turn it on. Thought power is very much like any mechanical power, like driving a car, for example. You must be able to start the engine, direct the car to its destination, and then turn off the power. We all know what would happen if you drove the car up to the garage door and left the motor running all night. The car wouldn't last very long, would it? Well, to my way of thinking, the petty worries that most of us indulge in, and in most cases our sleeplessness at night, simply means we don't know how to turn off the engine. If we have thinking to do or problems to solve, we should get up and think, and think our very best, concentrating every bit of our mental power on that problem. But when we the self have decided that's all the thinking I want to do tonight, then we should be able to turn off the switch in our brain like we turn off the switch in the car, and so let the brain rest. Another unending source of amazement to me is the way we create ill health for ourselves by this uncontrolled imagination. Even modern medicine is beginning to tell us that more of our ills are caused by worry and uncontrolled thinking than any other one cause. I'm not trying to say that all illness is caused by this mental process, or that we can cure all ills by right thinking at our present stage of development, although some people may think this is so. But I do feel that most of us are unaware of what our thought processes are. If we allow ourselves to use this creative power destructively in a negative way and allow it to stir up these lower emotions of fear and so on, the first thing we know, it manifests as a physical ill. I think it is very good for us to check up on ourselves and become a little more aware of what our thought processes are. I remember a little while back, when appendicitis seemed to be the fashion, that every individual, as soon as they would get a pain in the abdomen that was probably caused by nothing more than overeating or eating the wrong food, would start this mental process. Oh yes, it's in the right side, and I'm beginning to get the next symptom, and so on and so on, and the imagination kept going on and on until they often found themselves in the hospital with appendicitis. I read of a case in a medical journal a while back of a lady who died of cancer, who went through all the symptoms, the agony, the pain of a death by cancer. And when the autopsy was performed afterward, they couldn't find one single malignant cell. She had created the whole thing, including her death, by an uncontrolled imagination. Now remember, this is a medical journal I read this in, not a theosophical journal.
I thought it sounded fantastic. So I have discussed this with two or three medical friends I have come in contact with since, and they have related other instances, not quite as fantastic as this, but just unbelievable. I'm sure you and I don't go around creating our own self-destruction by an uncontrolled imagination. But check up on yourself the next time you experience a physical symptom of some kind and see what your thought habit is. The first time you get a little sniffling or scratching in your throat, are you immediately picturing, oh yes, this is the Asian flu, I know all the symptoms. Check up and see whether you are helping to create ill health for yourself by a negative or a wrong use of this divine creative power. Also, there is a phase of it that takes constant awareness, I feel, and that is that we don't get caught up in the mass thought forms that go on around us all the time. Are we caught up in them? Or are we able to think only what we ourselves think on a situation? The world situation, for example. Are we contributing towards another world war by adding our own destructive thought to that great thought form? Or are we able to control our thought to the point of using it to try to create goodwill, peace, and understanding among all men? It is so much easier to get caught up in this thought pattern that comes to us from outside, and so much more difficult to let the impetus for all of our thinking come from within ourselves. But this is the stage we have to reach before we complete our human evolution. To begin to become aware of what our thought patterns are. When you read a headline in the paper, what is your thought? How is your mind working to contribute towards these particular events? When I see individuals who have had the unhappy experience of committing some kind of a small crime or offense of some kind, and yet they make the headlines, I wonder how they ever go straight again. Millions of people read through every detail of that and send towards that individual this negative, destructive type of thought, usually adding their own lower emotions to it. And it's no wonder that we often have a regular epidemic of these things once we have a thing of this kind break out in an area. Well, to just the extent that we contribute our own negative thinking to that, to that same extent are we responsible for that. One day, it will all come back to us. One day, we will have to answer for every thought, as well as every word and every act, because things are thought first. The world as it is at the present time is the sum total of man's thinking. Nothing comes into existence until it is first thought. And as we use that thought, so we help to create the universe as it is. The only way we can change the world is to change our thinking. Each individual. Of course, the most important reason for learning to control this power of thought is because of our effect on others. Most of us have learned to control ourselves to the point of where we don't knock a man down if he does something we don't like. Some of us have even learned to control our speech to the point of not saying anything unkind, at least to his face. But what about our thinking? And after all, we have to realize that this is a real power, and it does much more damage to his subtler vehicles than any physical blow we could deal him. Many of us wish that we had £1,000,000 or a lot of authority or some great power or some capacity that would make us great benefactors to mankind. And yet we all have this power within ourselves, using it every moment of our lives. But unfortunately, many times destructively, because we haven't become aware yet of what our thought patterns are. Stop yourself in the middle of the day sometime. Just stop yourself and try to see what your thinking has been for even 2 or 3 minutes prior to that time. Most of us are unaware of what our thought patterns are and how we are using them. I would like to just close by quoting the last little bit from Dr. Bessett's book on the power of thought, which to my point of view is the finest thing ever written on the subject. She ends with this quotation. Thus we may learn to utilize these great forces that lie within us all, and to utilize them to the best possible effect. As we use them, they will grow, until with surprise and delight we shall find how great a power of service we possess. Let it be remembered that we are continually using these powers, unconsciously, spasmodically, feebly, affecting ever for good or ill all who surround our path in life. We cannot help thinking to some extent, however weak the thought currents we generate. We must affect those around us, whether we will or not. The only question we have to decide is whether we will do it beneficially or mischievously, feebly or strongly, driftingly or with set purpose. Here lies our choice. A choice momentous for ourselves and for the world. Choose well, for your choice is brief and yet endless.